Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, welcome to Film Fandango, the film podcast. My name's David Reed, and this is Merrick Larwood.
Hello, film lovers. Welcome to the 88th most popular film podcast.
Is that right?
In the world.
Wow.
I don't even know how people find out about this podcast. There's no publicity at all.
It's just word of mouth, isn't it? Round the world of mouth.
Well, if you're still listening, this is 160-something episodes.
Yeah, we've done a lot.
Well done to you.
Yeah, yeah. That is, and if you want to see what a commitment that is, just take that number and then add the words weeks of our life at the end of it.
Yeah, I don't do anything else apart from do this.
No.
Anyway, so the Oscar nominations are out. So we've been going to see some Oscar nominated films and some not nominated Oscar films.
Yes.
I mean, that's the two categories.
We've been seeing films, basically. yes, we talked about the best film nominations sort of loosely last week.
So we're going to talk about the best actor and actress. So the best actor nominations: Steve Carell, Foxcatcher.
Yes, we talked about briefly last week.
Bradley Cooper, American Sniper.
Still not seen it.
His third nomination in a row, apparently.
I don't understand this Bradley Cooper thing.
Me neither.
He seems fine.
Yeah.
You know?
He's never blown me away in anything. Especially, well, I hope he doesn't as a sniper.
Well, I enjoyed him in the A-Team. That was the pinnacle for me.
Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yep.
The Imitation Game.
Yep.
Michael Keaton, Birdman.
Yes, please.
Eddie Redmayne, Theory of Everything.
Yep.
I've seen four of these five, and I think it's between Keaton and Redmayne. We talked about it last week, if you want to go, so I don't know why I'm talking about it now.
Two Etonians on that list. That is weird. That's weird. That's two guys from one school.
It's so nice seeing people from Eton do well. Best actress.
Yeah.
Marion Cotillard, 2 Days, 1 Night.
Love her.
I love her, but
you saw that. You said it was a bit boring.
Awful, boring film.
Yeah, yeah.
Like a really rubbish documentary. Felicity Jones, Theory of Everything.
She's a newbie, relatively, isn't she?
Yeah. Julianne Moore, Still Alice. Rosamund Pike, Gone Girl. Reese Witherspoon, Wild.
Okay. Julianne Moore seems to get nominated every year.
She's going to be the new Meryl Streep, who's also been nominated every year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Meryl Streep could just basically shit in a bin and she'd be nominated, wouldn't she?
Well, she played a singing witch and got nominated. Is she nominated this year? No, she's not.
Yeah, she is.
She is.
Best Supporting Actress.
Oh, Best Supporting, okay. Yeah.
I think I've seen three of these performances, so I think Felicity Jones should get this.
Okay,
she's brilliant. So this that's enough of that, is it?
Well, I've not seen these films, so I can't really comment. I mean, there's lots of talented people there, but you know, this is a loose film chat from normal people rather than these people who've seen absolutely everything.
You say normal?
Well, you know, from not special people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, David.
You're welcome.
I went to see Whiplash.
Yeah. And how was it?
Very, very good.
Excellent. Do you want to give our audience a brief description of what
this
film is?
It's about music. So what it is, this drummer called Andrew, he's at the Schaefer, this fictional music college, and the most famous... It's supposed to be the best music college in America.
Top Gun Academy for drums.
Pretty much. And he's playing drums in a band. And the best band at that college is run by... I can't remember his name's Fletcher or something. Played by J.K. Simmons, who is this autocrat. Is that right? A dictator-like sort of...
Tyrannical.
Tyrannical is a much better word. Yeah! He's a tyrannosaur. Yes, he almost too. He's certainly a monster. That's right. He runs. He's the biggest mentor of this, the best band there. That goes in for the competitions, and he basically rules it with an iron rod. And you make one slight mistake, yeah, like a Nazi dictator,
yeah,
type. I don't know. Even who the head of what's the word for a head of a band.
Well, what kind of band are we talking?
Jazz band.
Jazz band. Is he a conductor? What's he do?
He's more than that. He's everything. He's the heartbeat.
Does he play in the band,
though? No.
Oh, that's odd.
Just runs it.
Band leader.
Yeah, but
I think it's called band leader.
So it's about obsession. It's about attaining greatness and about someone who's whose levels of great beyond setting beyond average levels of greatness.
Okay.
And it's almost like a bit like Top Gun. It's like a thriller with set in in the world of music.
Is there a lot of drumming in the soundtrack?
There's a lot of drumming and incredible drumming. It makes what's interesting with this film. My favourite two films that the nominees I've seen so far are Birdman, which is incredible, and Whiplash. This one, which
both with awesome. Drumming soundtracks,
and that's an odd coincidence as well. But it's make the subject matter to make a dramatic film out of not that much. We talked about premises in the past and bad films with good premises and good films with bad premises. This, if you said, it's a story about a drummer and his tutor who are both trying to attain perfection and striving for this at the cost of their other aspects of their lives, you would think, well, that doesn't sound that amazing. But the way this is done, and there's been some criticism with adding drama to something where and making it too extreme.
Yeah.
But I thought it was the undertone of this is basically that what is perfection and what you should strive for with your life, that message.
Yes.
That averageness is not acceptable, which is great, I think.
It's it is a, well, I think averageness is fine. I mean, if everyone didn't achieve averageness, it wouldn't be the average. So, I can see how it would appeal to Hollywood, though. That idea of, it's okay to be an asshole as long as I am doing better than everybody else.
But this is, I think, the two things, and it's the two performances. So, Andrew is played by Miles Teller, and J.K. Simmons, who's nominated for Best Supporting Actor, plays a tutor. Both their performances are great.
Do you think anyone in this film and this film stands a chance, though, against the competition? Because is it not just a sort of honourable mention?
No, it's a great J.K. It's between J.K. Simmons and Thingy and Birdman.
Ed Norton. Okay.
Very close. I personally slightly favour Ed Norton, but I think J.K. Simmons might get it for basically the film's on their shoulders.
Yeah.
And it's a great film.
Well, that's interesting that it's a best supporting role, but the film's on their shoulders, because I don't think Birdman is on Ed Norton's shoulders. I think he's fantastic in it, but it's firmly on Keaton's shoulders, you know.
Yeah.
But J.K. Simmons is the poster boy of Whiplash.
I've got to say, their poster, the orange poster on the tube, with him standing on the drumstick,
it's a gangplank.
A brilliant poster.
Yeah.
That's one of the best posters of recent times. I'm tempted to get the postcard of that from my wall.
A postcard.
But the music afterwards. What's great about this film? I think I've not described it in the best way. It changes the way you think about music, and it changes. You listen to the soundtrack beforehand,
yeah,
and you go, "Oh, that's some jazz being played." You listen to it afterwards, and it completely alters the way. And as someone who's not, I'm not musically inclined, and you are, the work and the effort and years of study to get to a level where a group of people can play a precise, you know, with that level of precision, to level perfection, you start to appreciate that.
Yeah.
And when a film does that, when it makes you appreciate something before you take for granted, then it's in a way it's successful. And it's more than it was filmed in 19 days, this film.
What?
19 days, and it won a $3 million budget. So you're up against Birdman, which is, I don't know, 30 million film for you. It's filmed, and you can tell where they've cut costs, where you don't see big sort of or you don't see shots of huge audiences. It's all quite shot. you can tell it's shot quite cheaply.
They do an audience with the sound effects rather than with it.
Yeah, they do have ways of getting around that. But right. they did this in 19 days.
I mean,
I barely
Does J.K. Simmons play the drums days. In it then? Or is he
no,
just
he's
the band
just
leader?
The band leader. Okay. He plays the piano.
So they've cast someone who's a phenomenal percussionist in the lead role. What's he like as an actor?
No, he's an actor before. He's played... you might recognise him. He's actually... He plays someone who kills someone in Nicole Kidman's film. I can't remember what it's called. About a car crash. You can see the scar. He was actually in the car crash himself. Miles Teller, his name is. He's very good because he's not a classically handsome person. You know, he's an interesting face. He's an interesting character, and it's really nice. I always sort of try and big up these characters who aren't the classic Hollywood things. They're far more interesting to watch.
Mm.
He was in the Rabbit Hole, where he plays the boy who's killed Nicole Kidman's son in a car crash.
Okay, yeah.
And he's done quite a few different parts. He's very good. He was taught the drums. He played anyway. He was more of a rock drummer. He had to relearn the drums as a jazz drummer because they hold the drumsticks differently.
Yes, they do.
And he had a 4 hours, you know, a day for 3 months. So it would look realistic. And it does look totally realistic. You believe he's playing the drums. And as a drummer yourself, I'm fascinated.
I
want to
see
it.
I totally want to see it.
It makes you want to go and listen to jazz music, which is a feat in itself.
And I have never wanted to do that, even as a drummer.
And there's one speech in it, well, I won't do a spoiler, but J.K. Simmons has this brilliant speech, which is a great moment, a classic moment in the film, and that is an audition speech that sums up the whole ethos of the film. And I sort of, you enjoy it more and more as you go through it, and it's about the obsession with something,
yeah.
and how you can only achieve greatness with obsession. I think it's true in some ways, and it stayed with you. I mean, Birdman stayed with me a bit, but this film has stayed with me a bit more, I think.
Birdman, I can see that potentially what John Luke Roberts was getting at when we first talked about Birdman is that the more you sort of mull over Birdman in your head... Sorry, buddy's playing with a dead squeaky toy, so it's making some odd noises in the background. The more you mull over it in your head, the more you actually go, there wasn't much below the surface of Birdman, but boy, what a surface. You know what I mean? Where, you know, it does sort of disappear into nothing almost, because it there wasn't a greater meaning, you know?
I'm just disturbed by it.
But it's nice. Do you want me to take it off it? Sorry, fella. Leave. Good boy.
Anyway, Whiplash, do go and see it. There's some great films on the list this year. I'll give it 9 Mavericks.
So Birdman still wins. You gave Birdman 10.
Yeah, I don't... I'm interested to see how they stand up to the second viewing. That's always a good test of how great a film is.
Yeah, yeah.
Shall we read some letters we've had in?
Yeah, who's written in?
Okay. It's Fran Jolly has written in.
Fran Jolly.
And he's seen quite a lot of the nominees.
Where's Fran from? I don't know.
A good day, film fanatics and a dog. Thank you for giving me an excuse to the Action Aid chuggers. I explain that I have emailed Film Fandango and therefore do not need to donate to starving African children. They beg to differ, but surely you wouldn't lie.
But that's something we said a few weeks ago.
I said you need to donate to this podcast, otherwise a starving African child dies.
That's right. Well, he said he's emailed to us and that's enough. No. You are wrong, Franchise.
No. In fact, more die.
I saw Whiplash, Theory of Everything, Birdman and Foxcatcher in the last few weeks. Whiplash gets my nod for the Oscar, as it's one of the most enjoyably tense experiences I've had at the flicks for a long, long time. It's a simple idea, acted and directed to perfection, and the final scene is one of the best 10 minutes in modern cinema. Foxcatcher is interesting, but lacks any likeable characters, so after an hour you question if you really need to watch the film or just go to Wikipedia. Birdman has a lot of good ideas, but lacks a real payoff. Theory of Everything is really good, the best biopic of the year. Have you seen What We Do in the Shadows? The best comedy from last year, and painfully under-distributed.
I was going to go and see What We Do in the Shadows yesterday, but a casting overran, so I missed the beginning, so I didn't go. I will see it. That What We Do in the Shadows is a vampire film. It looks like the good version of Dark Shadows, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm
vampire comedy.
Here's another letter from Darren Rogers. He doesn't say what should I do it as?
A friendly dinosaur.
Hello, David and Merrick. I'm answering your plea for listener emails, but not sure what to discuss, so I've just thought of a random topic. Have you ever gone to see a film without knowing the plot and been pleasantly surprised? I saw True Romance in South Carolina, and we didn't know what the film was about. We just chose it as we thought it sounded romantic. It's now one of my favourite films. Also, thank you, Merrick, for recommending The Heat. I wouldn't have watched it without your praise, and I really enjoyed it. Although my partner and I did spend the first 15 minutes discussing what Sandra Bullock had done with her face. Keep watching the films. Darren.
Did you recommend The Heat? Me who recommended
The
Heat.
No, I recommend that you watched it afterwards.
Oh, is that right?
It's all down in podcast good. History, yeah.
Bloody good
Mr.
film.
Mr. McCarthy, brilliant.
Yeah, Sandra Bullock's brilliant Bullock as well. Weird. All faces gone weird. Yeah. So, what was the question?
Films you didn't know the plot of, but you've been pleasantly surprised by.
I can't remember now, but it's definitely a phenomenon where when you just risk something that you've heard nothing about and it blows you away.
Yeah.
Like, Nebraska, I had no clue what that was about. And you just have that added element of surprise on everything. So, there's that. It's a subtle damage it does to your enjoyment of something, seeing a trailer, but it does do it because you've seen that shot before, you've seen that line before, and it just chips away at the experience.
That's
of it.
The problem, I think, is that when you go to cinema, it's only really foreign films that surprise you.
Because no one's talking about them, which is, you know, just enhances their appeal.
Go and see a film called Get Out of Kolya, a really old Kolya, a Russian film about an old man, a violinist, and a kid. It's really good. Yeah, so most of the films, yeah, you just see all the trailers. I've got to say, the advert thing is getting ridiculous. When I went to go and see Whiplash, it was 20 minutes of adverts before the trailers.
Crazy. It used to be like, you know, 10-10, yeah, then 15-15.
20 minutes of adverts.
Yeah.
And then after that, you've got, you know, another 10-15 minutes of trailers. Bullshit.
Total bullshit. Great. Well, thank you for your letters. If you'd like to email us, then please do so. DearFilmFandango@gmail.com. Or you can write on our Facebook wall, /FilmFandango. Or you can tweet us at FilmFandango, at Mr. David Reed, or at Marek Larwood.
And you can donate to help us fund this podcast. Because we don't get any freebies or anything.
No, no freebies.
And we're both out of work.
Right, but if you would care to do so, then go to filmfandango.co.uk and follow the links from there.
Oh, God. What have you seen?
What have I seen? Well, I actually caught up on an old film that almost passed me by.
Nicolas Cage is in this. I'm going to go mental.
No, he's not. I so nearly watched The Dying of the Light to piss you off, but no, I didn't. I watched a film that... actually, talking about it, I knew nothing about, other than the poster and the title, which actually gives a false impression, I think. This film is A Walk Amongst the Tombstones.
Sounds nice.
Which is a lovely, lovely little walk. Starring Liam Neeson in the poster wearing an overcoat with the collar turned up and holding a gun.
So you Action Neeson.
It's just Taken again, isn't it? It's not. This film is... it feels like a 90s thriller in that he plays a detective who is hunting a serial killer. It's based on a series of novels about this character, and originally Harrison Ford was cast in this role. So it's more that sort of Patriot Games, fugitive-style feel. You know, it's become unfashionable to do the hunting a serial killer thing. I think sort of since Seven, everyone's gone, oh, we can't top that. But... This is a really well put together film. It's really interesting and fun, and it manages to avoid cliche really quite well.
What happens in it then?
Basically, Before the titles, Liam Neeson is a cop who is an alcoholic, but it doesn't treat alcoholism like all American
films
do.
Going to a bar and having a whiskey?
Yeah, well, he's in a bar having a whiskey, when, like all alcoholics do, when but he's in a booth at the back, so you can't see...
He's not at the bar.
No, he's not at the bar. So from you can't see he's there from the door, and the place is held up, and the bartender is shot in the chest with a shotgun, and he's already pissed, but comes out shooting, and he ends up killing two of the assailants and chasing the other down the street.
Get him!
Shooting wildly. Anyway, that's the beginning. That's the setup of his backstory, of his character. We cut to... And that's in 1991. I think we then cut to 99. And he is retired. He's quit the force. And he's now a non-licensed private investigator for sort of cash on the side. And he's 8 years sober. So he's, you know...
I mean, that would put you off drinking, wouldn't it, if you end up in a shootout?
I think so. Well, there's more to it than that. You find out more of what actually happened from beyond what you saw at the beginning of the film. But...
is it good?
Basically, it is really good. What the plot revolves around the fact a drug dealer's girlfriend is kidnapped, and he then pays the kidnappers, and... they end up delivering his girlfriend back to him in the boot of a car in like 50 packets, the size of cocaine packets, but yeah, and it's
she's dead then.
Yeah, she's pretty dead, yeah, because she wasn't made of Lego in the first place. And he's following the mystery of who this person is and what they're doing and why and all of that. And it's a proper old mystery. It's good.
Did this get a cinema release?
Yeah, yeah. It got tube posters and everything. Yeah, but I don't know why it sort of passed everyone by. I think there were a couple of posters around at similar. There was one of a Kevin Costner film that looked very similar to this, and The Equalizer as well, which had an almost identical poster with Denzel Washington in it at the time. I don't know if it just sort of got lost in the noise, but
it's strange how all the action heroes, all these since Taken, they've turned into these older 50s.
Yeah,
That it's become acceptable.
But I sort of prefer that. He's in his 60s now. He's 62, Neeson.
It's almost like this whole 70s cops when they're all in their, you know, like Maverick and. I can't remember all the other, you know, all the like Columbo with more action versions of
because
there are more interesting grizzled characters, so it's good to have that rather than the young cops.
I mean, I personally find young protagonists less interesting than the sort of people with history and baggage, you know.
Is it purely down to Liam Neeson? Is that a turning point, the first Taken, which was a big success, that everyone went, okay?
Well, I think
we can.
I mean, maybe this is sort of a bit of a gross interpretation, but Neeson seemed to go down the dark revenger path soon after the tragic death of his wife. He swapped what kind of roles he was going for. Before that, he was doing stuff like Love Actually
and political films.
Yeah, exactly. And now he plays, you know, the guy with a tragic past.
I can't wait for 20 years' time when we're both action heroes.
That's going to be great, isn't it? I look forward to that. But no, this is well worth a watch. It's not perfect. There's something missing, and it's directed by and written by a guy called Scott Frank, and he's fascinating because he's written far more films than he's directed. This is only the second film, I think. He's done an episode of TV or something, but he. The second film he's directed, but he wrote Out of Sight, one of my favourite films of all time, also weirdly Marley and Me, which whether you like
one of my least favourite films.
I love Marley and Me. I think it's a very well written film, but you have to like dogs, I think, to like Marley and Me. But he wrote Get Shorty. Minority Report was his.
Oh, quite different films, but Get Shorty's a novel. He's basically screenwriting off. Adapting that for
it seems so. He wrote The Wolverine, which I didn't think much of. But the reason I'm talking about him is so there's a really good screenplay there, and it's not badly directed at all. It's very well directed, but there's a lack of an authorship that would have really elevated this story to, I think, being a bit of a classic. Because it doesn't have that stylistic flair. It's almost just like it's just been shot. There's glimpses of it. There's one moment where the killer has gone to the house of the next victim and realised that he's made a mistake, and is, you know, there's no one to kidnap. And then the daughter of the person he's been following comes out in a red coat, and suddenly the music changes and it goes all slow-mo, and it's very Tarantino-esque, and it works, it really works, but it's just like it lacks more of those little... I mean, because Seven was so stylish and sort of set the tone for every thriller afterwards. It's like you need the thriller genre can really be slip more gritty and stylish than this is. But apart from that, I think it's very good.
How many Davids?
I'd probably give it seven. I think
seven Davids.
Yeah, it's worth seeing. It's worth seeing.
Well, that's about it, isn't it, really?
Yeah, that'll do. Thank you for listening in, listeners. You're the bestest. Keep watching the films. Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.